Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. My newsmaker of the day today is Judy Key. Judy is an animal protection advocate who has successfully lobbied for major measures to provide humane treatment of animals. Judy is also a representative of the Humane Society of the United States. She serves on their California State Council, so very influential person here. Judy, welcome to the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, Judy is here to warn us about some measures in the food bill that was just passed by the House of Representatives and is now in a Senate Conference Committee. This measure is very extreme. It actually stripped out all funding for food stamps, zero funding for food stamps for the poor if this Congress had its way. And that's been much in the media, but what a lot of people don't know is that the bill also has some pretty severe impacts for animal protection legislation. Judy, tell us a little bit, first of all, about a couple of the major measures that you have passed in California that would be undone if this bill passes in Congress.
In 2007 and 2008, along with tens of thousands of volunteers, we put a ballot initiative approved by Californians by 63% statewide and 65% in San Diego. They approved Proposition 2, which is the ban on intensive confinement of factory farm animals.
And this was to protect animals such as chickens that were being kept in cages so small they couldn't even stretch their wings. They couldn't even turn around.
Right. The egg-laying hens, the space that they have still right now, because the bill doesn't kick in until 2015, is a third of the size of a sheet of paper.
Unbelievable.
And pigs being in gestation crates where they're immobilized for their entire life.
Pigs.
It's just wrong.
Mother
pigs.
Horrifying. Yeah. So Californians passed this, and you have another major piece of legislation that you were also largely responsible for, AB 376.
Right. That was in 2011 in California, Assembly Bill 376, where my organization was a co-sponsored, and it bans the sales, trade, possession, and distribution of shark fins in California. We are decimating this apex predator. 75 plus million sharks a year are killed just for their fins. It is a very inhumane way. They just hack off the fin and throw the shark back in the water and let them sink to the bottom and die a very excruciating, slow, painful death.
So that people can have shark fin soup, which is, I guess, a delicacy in cultures.
We have now passed that in 8 states, and the King Amendment will undo all that.
Tell us exactly what the King Amendment to the Farm Bill in Congress, tell us exactly what that would do.
Okay, let me just give you an example of what Steve King, he's a Republican from Iowa. When we were trying to pass legislation to keep children away from animal fights, he actually said that it's not a federal crime to induce someone to watch people fighting. What's wrong with these people? So he has been known for some rather crazy ideas. But the King Amendment in the Farm Bill is more than crazy. It is very, very dangerous, and it has actually passed the House. Now, the House version of the Farm Bill has a provision in it, authored by Steve King, that would nullify measures that we pass in the state that relates to animal welfare, like farm animal confinement, horse slaughter, puppy mills, sales of shark fins, and other legislation in regards to food safety, food labeling, environmental requirements, labor standards, and many, many other issues. In other words, the King Amendment creates a blanket federal preemption of state and local standards regarding agriculture production.
So any animal that's agricultural in nature could be sold in any state, even if it's been banned somewhere else for whatever reason.
Exactly. In one fell swoop, the King Amendment would negate Proposition 2 in California, Proposition 204 in Arizona, which is a similar proposition. Amendment 10 in Florida, which outlaws pig gestation crates, these little tiny metal crates where they are immobile. 8 state laws against the sales of shark fins, 34 state laws and set of rules on puppy mills.
So it's not just farm animals. Then a dog is a pet, not a farm animal.
But there are, well, the puppy mills are pretty much like factory farms for puppies. Mm-hmm. And 6 state laws on horse slaughter and countless other duly enacted laws across the country.
Speaking with Bobby Brink earlier this morning, she was in the studio with Lions, Tigers, and Bears, and she was concerned to try to find out whether this may also apply to sale of exotic animals. She's been instrumental in getting laws passed in Ohio and trying to get one through at a federal level to prohibit people from owning lions, tigers, bears, poisonous snakes, other kinds of dangerous animals as pets, because we know that that often doesn't work out, and they wind up in rescue facilities or worse, killed, as happened in Ohio when many of them were turned loose.
And she is exactly right, because if it's a state legislation, King Amendment, if passed, would demolish all that.
Wow, that is just absolutely shocking. Now, we looked up the votes of San Diego's congressional delegation, and out of the 5 congressional members from our region, only one voted for this farm bill, and that was Congressman Daryl Issa. Duncan Hunter was not present or did not vote, and Democrats Susan Davis, Juan Vargas, and Scott Peters voted no. But Daryl Issa did vote to completely eliminate food stamps as well as overturn states' rights to legislate humane treatment of animals. Where do our U.S. senators, Senators Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein from California, stand on this? Do you know, Judy?
Well, first, I would like to applaud my own congressman, Congressman Scott Peters. I have been calling his office all the way through the House version of the Farm Bill, and he had voted against it every single time, not just about humane legislation, but also because of the stripping of the food stamp.
Where do our U.S. senators, Senators Feinstein and Senator Boxer, stand on this measure?
I am very pleased that we are lucky in California. We have 2 senators who are right up there. They get A pluses on our humane scores all the time. I received an email from Senator Dianne Feinstein explaining to me that she completely understands this draconian measure that would overturn all the state legislation, and that she is totally on board with us with stripping it. And as I was driving here for this interview, I received word from HSUS, Humane Society of the United States, with whom I'm a volunteer in a leadership role. Senator Barbara Boxer has also signed on to strip King Amendment from the final, because they're in conference committee. You know, they reconcile the differences between the House and the Senate bill, and that both our senators are on board with stripping it.
Now, do we know about President Obama? Has he taken a position on this?
I can't speak to that because I'm not aware of that. We have really been all hands on deck of trying to get our senators to help in conference to strip it.
But what can listeners do?
You have friends and family living in other states. We need your help because we're doing well. Both our senators are on board. If you have relatives, please either via social media or call them. And if they care about animals, if they care about people, if they care about states' rights, if they care about
good
democracy.
Point. Isn't states' rights supposed to be a conservative value? So how did this conservative-controlled Congress pass
something
like that?
What happened to local government, right? Mm-hmm. So if they care about all these issues that I just mentioned, please ask your relatives who are not in the state of California to pick up the phone and call their 2 senators. There is nothing more effective, and I've been doing this since 07 now, there is nothing more effective than picking up the phone and call and say, I'm your constituent, please do everything within your power to strip the King Amendment from the final version of the Farm Bill. And that's all you have to do. It takes less than 2 minutes. It's really easy. And every time I have called any of my representatives, their staffers have been more than welcoming, warm. So, you know, don't be intimidated. You know, online petitions, I don't know a single legislator who pick up an online petition and look at it. Phone calls is the way to go.
That personal contact is still the most
absolutely
effective. Where can listeners get more details, more information about this, Judy? Is there a website someplace?
Yes, if they can do a quick Google search of the Humane Society of the United States. That's the national organization. We primarily work on legislation because you can't rescue your way out of cruelty. We do need to have better laws to protect animals.
Judy, thank you so much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to help.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. Saturday, August 3rd is the long-awaited KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso Radio Launch Party. The party, held at Mission Trails Regional Park Visitor Center, celebrates the start of a new, independent, people-powered community radio station in our region, which you are listening to right now. The station is dedicated to the news, arts, and culture of our region, including the East County Magazine radio show. Mix and mingle with radio hosts and celebrity guests in a spectacular natural setting. Enjoy live music, Native American flute players, delicious food and drinks, stargazing, museum tours, and a scavenger hunt, as well as a Golden Mike Awards presentation to leaders representing voices in our communities. Learn how you can have your voice heard on 89.1 Descanso in the heart of East County. Tickets can be purchased at www.knsj.org. The beautiful Mission Trails Regional Park Visitor Center is located at 1 Father Junipero Serra Drive in San Diego. San Pasquale's Saturday Night Live Music features the Pushpins Band. Catch local live music at the San Pasquale Winery Tasting Room in the La Mesa Village on La Mesa Boulevard on August 4th at 7 p.m. We are excited to include an upcoming event in this week's Destination East County that is a fundraiser for our own East County Magazine. Enjoy our Barbecue and Wild West Fest in the countryside of beautiful Descanso on Saturday, August 10th from 4 to 7 p.m. We will have Western reenactors from both the Hole in the Wall Gang and the Gaskell Brothers Gunfighters, creating for you comedy skits and roving through the crowd. Pine Creek Posse Band will provide live music while guests enjoy a special tri-tip and chicken smoked barbecue dinner and browse the silent auction and drawing prizes. This event will benefit the wildfire reporting and emergency alerts that East County provides during the fire season and all year long. A featured family activity this week is Fun Believable Plays Family Fun Nights. Fun Believable Play is an indoor playground and party center in Lakeside. Their giant playground is suitable for children aged 0 to 12 years. Enjoy games, a movie, and other activities, Fridays from 5 to 8 p.m. They are located at Riverside Drive in Lakeside. The website is www.funbelievableplay.com. Wednesday night, it's ice skating at the Croc at 7:15 p.m. with special pricing. They also have a film on the field on July 31st at 7:30 p.m. Croc Center Recreation Field is located at the Salvation Army Croc Center on University Avenue, just outside of La Mesa in San Diego. Their website is www.croccenter.org. Experience Fly Days at Gillespie Field Cafe. Fly over to Gillespie Field Cafe for an afternoon of fun and watch the planes land and take off from inside the Gillespie Field Cafe. The cafe will host Fly Days every first Friday of the month. Enjoy live music, food, and more. The Gillespie Field Cafe is located at 2015 North Marshall Avenue in El Cajon. Cruise in the Lakes at Santee Lakes. This weekly car show with music and entertainment is held every Friday through October 3rd from 3 p.m. until closing. Also at Santee Lakes on Friday night, August 2nd, is Movies by the Lake with the movie Avengers, rated PG-13. On August 16th, they will be showing Rise of the Guardians. There are games and contests for kids at 7 p.m. and the movie starts at approximately 8 p.m. The location for both of these events, the car show and the movie, is Santee Lakes. Manny Cepeda performs salsa music this Friday evening, August 2nd, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Sunset Summer Concert Series. The concerts are held at the Macy's Courtyard in the Grossmont Center in La Mesa. There are raffle prizes every week during the band's first break, and each adult visitor receives one complimentary ticket. That's all for this week. See you around East County.
Howdy! East County Magazine and KNSJ invite you to our Barbecue and Wild West Fest on Saturday, August 10th from 4 to 7 p.m. at the historic Descanso Town Hall in Descanso. Round up your friends and family for this fun-filled event. We'll have a Wild West show featuring the Hole in the Wall Gang and the Gaskell Brothers reenacting scenes from our region's colorful Western past. The Pine Creek Posse Band will provide live music, so grab your partner and bring your dancing shoes, or should we say cowboy boots. Plus, the Descanso Junction will be cooking up a tri-tip barbecue feast. We'll also have prizes and surprises at our Wild West Fest, which is all a benefit to support our wildfire reporting, alerts, and nonprofit community news. Yee-haw! Reservations are going fast, so save your spot now for our August 10th Wild West Fest. Call 619-698-7617 or email editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Today, you can also find more details at www.eastcountymagazine.org. A reward is being offered for information leading to the arrest and conviction of four suspects who left a dead rabbit in a box with a death threat at the home of a lakeside man. Dennis Richardson's photographs and stories have previously appeared in East County Magazine. He says he was shocked to find a gift-wrapped box in balloon gift wrap outside his home that surveillance cameras indicate was left about 1:20 in the morning on Tuesday, July 30th. It had a hand-scrawled threat reading, "Someone's gonna get beat with my bat." He called the sheriff, who dispatched a bomb arson squad, and they blew up the box, believing it to be a suspicious device. Inside, afterwards, they found a dead rabbit, brownish-gray rabbit, with a red ribbon tied around its neck. Surveillance video showed four male suspects in light-colored clothing. They left behind clues, including a shoebox for men's athletic shoes, size 13, white active performance Succeed, manufactured by Champion and sold locally at Target. A video of the suspects has been posted on the Lakeside Eucalyptus Hills Facebook page that Richardson operates. He said he takes the threat seriously and noted that this is a federal offense to make terroristic threats. He has offered a $200 reward. He told East County Magazine that he's been visited by sheriff's investigators, spoken to federal authorities, and that Animal Control has also launched an animal cruelty investigation. He believes the threat may have been prompted by details that he posted on his community's Facebook page, where he has shared information about reckless drivers and what he calls kids running wild in the neighborhood. "Anything that goes on in our community, we all know about it like a big family," he said. "That's important because we are able to deter crime, and if there is something going on, we are able within minutes to share it with a couple of hundred people on Facebook, and that is powerful." If you have information on this incident, please call the Santee Sheriff's Office, which is investigating, and their phone number is 956-4037. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. Now it's time for the East County Magazine Trivia Quiz. Okay, we are back with another edition of Friday Fun Time. Today our contestants are Gray Feathers, Brooke, and Lynn. Welcome.
Hi.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
All right. First question is, where in our region have weasels been popping up recently?
The city council?
The county jail?
Santee Lakes.
No. Good guesses. Let me give you some choices. Is it the Laguna Mountain, Lindo Lakes Park, the county administration building, or City Hall downtown?
Well, City Hall would be the first place I would look for weasels, but if we're talking about the four-legged kind, I would have to say somewhere near water.
You're close.
Lindo Lake.
Lindo Lakes Park. Brooke got it.
All right.
Next question. Who or what is a hoodoo?
Oh, that's something from New Orleans, I'm sure. There's hoodoos down there, yeah. Like a hoodoo there. Isn't that something like...
That's what you get the beads thrown at you for.
Okay. Actually, let me give you some choices. Is it a hookah pipe, a kumeyaay greeting, a teetering rock formation, or the latest teenage dance craze?
A kumeyaay rock formation.
All right.
It's a dance phrase. dance craze, doing the hoodoo.
I'm going to give that one to Lynn. It is a teetering rock formation, not kumeyaay, but it's one of those rocks that we see in East County that are like an upside down triangle where it's eroded at the bottom and it's defying gravity how these things stay up. But anyway.
All right. Who'd have thought of that?
Okay, the city of La Mesa recently legalized something that has been illegal for many years.
Skateboards?
Marijuana. Skateboarding?
Skateboarding?
Nope, not skateboarding.
Marijuana?
Marijuana.
Nope. Gay marriage?
Gay marriage? Well, that's already legal in California now. No, let me give you some choices. Is it billboards, beekeeping, water recycling, or winemaking?
Beekeeping.
Chickens.
Winemaking. Winemaking.
Wow. Brooke got it. Winemaking it is. Wow. Yes. First winery in La Mesa opened out there.
That's cool.
Okay. Next question.
I'll drink to that.
What animals may soon be reintroduced to their native range locally in San Diego's inland region?
Grizzly bears.
Nope. Zebras?
Let's give you some choices. Grizzly bears was one of the guesses. Obviously, that's been ruled out. The ones that are left are gray wolves, wild horses, or California condors.
California condors.
Gray wolves.
One choice left.
It's wild horses, right? Yes, it's wild horses. I just read about that in the paper in East County Magazine just a couple days ago.
Well, all these answers
the Heritage
are found
Herd.
In East County Magazine, the Heritage Herd.
Right? The Heritage Herd, yes. That's right. Very interesting.
Okay, a couple more. What was recently found by East County Magazine's photographer Jim Pelly in the Ocotillo Desert?
Weasels.
Flowers.
Well, they do have those out there, but that wasn't it. Now, was it a missing person, a gold nugget, a dinosaur skeleton, or a giant multi-ton blade that fell off a wind turbine?
Well, I happen to know that answer, and it was a 200-foot long blade off of a turbine that went flinging off into the desert.
You got it. That is right.
Unbelievable.
There you go. Yep. What civilization is older than the Kumeyaay Indians?
What? Would you repeat the question?
Name a civilization that's older than the Kumeyaay Indians. You baffled? I'll give you some choices.
Assyria.
Babylon? Assyria?
Was it the ancient Egyptians? The Chaldeans of Mesopotamia? The Roman Empire? Or none of the above?
None of the above.
None of the above.
That's right. Kumeyaay Indians have been here for 12,000 years, and that's older than all of those ancient civilizations.
Well, yeah, they lived in caves and wore beads, had long hair.
Kind of like you.
So they were the original hippies, actually.
Does that describe you, gray feathers?
That's me all over.
Okay, next question. Where would you find a life-size statue of a mastodon in East County?
Some museum?
No.
Is it the Heritage of the Americas Museum, Grossmont College, the Anza Borrego Desert, or the Republican Party headquarters?
Anza Borrego, I've seen him.
You got it.
It's so strange to be driving out in the desert and all of a sudden here's this gigantic mastodon or mammoth or
That's
wild
right.
horse.
He
and
wrote about a book. Okay, last question here now. The new owner of Hakumba Hot Springs also bought something else unusual. Actually, two other things unusual, so we'll give you a bonus if you can get them both. What else does he own?
I know the answer.
I know the answer too. So let's
and it's the bare
pass
truth.
It on to Lynn.
I was going
to
say a pool cleaner. I mean,
No, it's a very natural answer. Yes.
A lake, a glider port, a winery.
Clothes.
Clothes. Clothes. That's a hint.
A clothing optional resort.
Yes, he owns a clothing optional resort, De Anza Resort. And one more thing.
The town of Hakumba Hot Springs.
That's right.
But you will be able to keep your clothes on when you go to visit. It will not be clothing optional. And this concludes another wild and crazy session of the East County Magazine Trivia Quiz.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso is on the air, people-powered radio. Please come to our official KNSJ launch party, Saturday, August 3rd from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the beautiful Mission Trails Regional Park Visitor Center.
Come mix and mingle with our radio hosts and our celebrity guests in a spectacular natural setting. Enjoy live music, Native American flute players, delicious food and drinks, stargazing, museum tours, and a scavenger hunt. Golden Mike Awards presented to leaders and activists representing voices in our communities that are underrepresented.
RSVP and buy tickets at www.knsj.org.
This is Janice Mork, host of People Power, profiling people and organizations making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Janice Mork. I'm talking with Victoria Sinelnikov, who graduated as valedictorian at Cuyameca College. Victoria moved from Ukraine in 2004, where she worked as a nurse, to marry a fellow countryman who had immigrated as a child to the United States. She learned mostly conversational English in adult school. She's an example of the American success story when she moved here from a foreign country and was able to graduate as valedictorian. How hard was it to learn English?
I came to the United States in December of 2004. I studied English in the high school in Ukraine. I could read and write basic English, but I couldn't talk well. It was hard for me to learn American English because in Ukraine I studied British English.
What was the biggest challenge when you first moved here to the U.S.?
I was surprised that people follow rules and laws in the United States. That is totally different from my country.
And how did your parents feel when they found out you were moving to the U.S.?
They were surprised when I told them about my decision. They didn't want to let me go there, but I told them that I want to be together with my fiancé. I left everything behind, my family, friends, and work, as I had to start a fresh new life in the United States.
Why did you decide on Cuyameca College?
Cuyameca College is closer to my home than Grossman College. I visited both and I like the Cuyameca College more. I liked a beautiful landscape of Cuyameca and bigger parking lots.
Okay, that's very nice. She not only came here, but she had to raise two children while attending college. How did your husband support you and how did you manage to juggle school and family?
He's the only one person who financially supports our family, and also he helps me to take care of children while I'm in college. It is hard to juggle my time between both, because school takes priority over everything else, as I want to keep getting 4.0 in all my classes, as I believe will pay off at the end.
And you have two children, correct?
Yes.
And your son's name is?
Kirill.
And Elizabeth is now two?
Yes.
All right. Why did you decide to become a nurse from the start?
I wanted to be a physician from my early childhood because my grandfather was a surgeon orthopedist and my grandmother was a dentist. I decided to become a nurse from the start in the United States because I finished a medical school in Ukraine and earned my medical degree there. My nursing diploma was not recognized in the United States, so I decided to start my education from the beginning.
You also talk about your first biology class in your valedictorian speech and how you were motivated not to give up. So what motivated you?
The future of my family and my will to become a nurse motivated me to not give up.
And you plan to transfer to San Diego State in the fall to continue your career in the medical field. Do you plan to just get your nursing degree there?
I want to receive a bachelor's degree in pediatrics from San Diego State University, and later I want to receive a master's degree in order to become a nurse practitioner.
How long did it take to get your degree at Cuyameca?
I started my education in Cuyameca in the spring of 2007, and I graduated from Cuyameca College only in the spring of 2013. It was a long way for me.
Oh, wow. And you quoted Confucius in your opening speech. Would you mind sharing that quote with East County Magazine?
Yes, I was inspired by Confucius, who said, "It doesn't matter how slowly you go, as long as you do not stop," because his words were all about me.
Thank you for sharing your story with East County Magazine. You can read the story, which will be posted online at www.easthoneymagazine.org in the education section.
Thank you.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
You're listening to East County Magazine, the voice of East County. We reflect your interests, the people's interest, not special interest. As a nonprofit, we rely on community support. You can help us provide community news and reflect a rich diversity of voices by donating or becoming a sustaining member at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
We are on the road in East County at the Mission Trails Regional Park, in many ways the heart and soul of San Diego County. I'm Leon Thompson, and I'm here with our intrepid traveler, host, and East County Magazine editor, Miriam Raftery. The very first thing that struck me, Miriam, is that such a beautiful place, so rich in San Diego history, is so accessible. This is essentially the geographical center of the indigenous people of San Diego, the Kumeyaay. And it's easy to see why, with flowing water, lakes, and abundant vegetation, all protected by tall cliffs and mountains. It's no wonder that this very spot would be the center of Kumeyaay life and so much of San Diego's history.
Mission Trails is the largest urban regional park in America, with close to 6,000 acres. It has a spectacular visitor center and a museum where you can learn about the wildlife of the region and the Native Americans who used to inhabit this area. Let's go in now and listen to some of the interactive displays where you can hear wildlife of the region, such as coyotes, mountain lions, owls, hawks, eagles, and much more. Listen, and see how many wild animals you can hear.
What really brings the park alive is the work of the Mission Trails Regional Park Foundation, and the person most responsible for providing and promoting the educational and recreational opportunities is Jay Wilson, the head of the MTRP Foundation. Here he is talking with Miriam Raftery. Let's listen.
Jay, what's it like working in this spectacular setting?
Not very many people have an office of 5,800 acres, but I'm one of those fortunate people.
So it's a tough job, but somebody's got to do it.
It's tough, exactly.
Tell us a little bit more about the park.
This building here at the Visitor Center actually opened in February of 1995. The foundation, which I'm affiliated with, is a support group. The city owns all of the facilities and all of the grounds.
Now, they have a lot of activities here.
Within the park, we have 40 miles of trails. So you can go hiking, you can mountain bike, ride a regular bicycle, jog, you can rock climb. You can ride a horse if you bring your own horse. There are about 6 miles of horse trails in the park. If you're interested in a guided tour, every Wednesday, Saturday, and Sunday at 9:30, we offer a free guided walking tour.
Bird watching tours?
We have bird watching tours. It's on the website.
Now, do you have lessons in those? I want to learn how to go rock climbing or mountain biking.
We don't. There are several firms, REI and Southern Terrain, which offer rock climbing schools. That's private. It's really cool. Then you come into the Visitor Center, which is a cool zone during the summer.
And it's a spectacular library, by the way. We're sitting here doing this interview in an almost 360-degree view. Library, glass walls. It's a rough place, kids, if you got to study somewhere, but this is it.
This is it, yeah. Sometimes I come in here, particularly if it's raining during the winter.
Fireplace.
Watch the rain come up through the gorge. We have campground. We have 46 great campsites for rustic camping, but no campground operating at the moment. We're city. So they closed it actually in 2011. It's been closed almost 2 years.
What would it take to reopen it?
And it's about $136,000. So it was actually in the proposed budget for the fiscal year 2014, but it didn't make it at the last cut. It depends.
Maybe one of these days, though, it'll get reopened.
We hope so, absolutely.
Now, the visitor center itself is quite spectacular. Not only do you have the indoor facilities, you also have spectacular outdoor patios that overlook beautiful scenery, and you have a magnificent amphitheater out there where I understand you sometimes have some free outdoor entertainment. Tell us what's coming up.
The third Sunday, every month at 3 o'clock, we have a concert here in the visitor center. We have a 93-seat full-blown theater inside the visitor center. And then our programmed outdoor concert is with the San Diego Native American Flute Society.
And beyond flute playing, you have some other activities as
well. We've had some plays that have been put on by San Diego State.
Tell us about some of the things that you do for the young people of the community.
We have, through San Diego Gas Electric, we have had been the recipient of several grants. Mm-hmm. And as a result, probably had close to 10,000 children go through here in the last 3 years through the foundation. The city has a program where they run about 7,000 children through here a year. But with San Gas Electric, we actually at some point visited the classroom with one of our education program instructors. We go in with live animals and talk about plants, get them ready to come to Mission Trails, and they come and have a guided tour. We work with the Boy Scouts. We're actually starting a pilot project with Boy Scout group in San Carlos. We're going to work on an astronomy merit badge through our contacts with the San Diego Astronomy Association.
Now, you also have stargazing parties at night, and those are also free, right?
Those are free, and those are held practically down at the campground. You can go on the website, and it'll tell you when they're there, and they start at dusk and run until about 10 o'clock, and it's free.
Now, you also have a gorgeous rock-lined art gallery here where you have different kinds of art shows.
We had 97 different artists submit artwork, and we selected about 25 of them, and we have 10 month-long art shows a year. In between that, we have a photography contest, an amateur photo contest we've run for 21 years. But the art is up for sale, and for any purchase, 25% of that goes to the Mission Trails Regional Park Foundation.
Of course, there's the museum that we've already talked about as we've gone through that has a lot of information on Kumeyaay history, Native Americans, wildlife of the park. There's also a gift shop here.
Gift shop, yes. It's an educational gift shop. We just got in a great collection of handmade pots and pine needle baskets.
Beautiful carved walking sticks.
Beautiful carved walking sticks, yeah. And the pots and the pine needle baskets come from the Pai Pai tribe, which is affiliated with the Kumeyaay, south of the border in the northern Baja.
You also have a number of classes here.
We have two programs for children. One is Linda Holly's Nature Adventures. She'll start back up in September. It includes songs of hers, and she shows live animals and pelts and talks about plants and bugs and has really interesting topics, primarily for children 3 and up. And then on most Saturdays, we have an art class for children 4 through about 14, conducted by Nora.
We have Explore Mission Trails Day, which is one of your big events every year.
That's our real big event, and that's where probably everything in the park is free. Third Saturday of May.
Now, it's a little known fact. Organizations can actually rent this entire venue if they're having a special event.
Corporations and nonprofits will use the facility after hours for fundraisers and primary activities. There's a 4,000-foot terrace out here, and then they rent the building itself and the terrace. Of course, this time of year, it's great when you have an evening function.
Speaking of evening functions, we are having the party of the year here as the launch party for KNSJ coming up on August 3rd. Beautiful Saturday night. We're going to have some stargazing. And tell us a few of the things that you've got lined up.
We'll have a couple of trail guides that will be here walking around talking to people. There's certainly a number of people have never been here before, so we're always interested to talk to them and get them interested to come back to the park. Mm-hmm. We have a couple of Native American flute players that will be here performing, and the San Diego Astronomy Association will have a couple of telescopes up on the terrace. And I've been amazed over the evenings that we've had here. A number of adults have never looked in a big telescope.
KNSJ is going to be bringing in a lot of speakers, a lot of leaders in the community. They're going to be giving away some awards to different people in the community and having some great food and other kinds of music. And it's just going to be a really fun evening and something not to be missed.
Yeah, there'll be lots of food and entertainment, and it should be a great event. We're looking forward to having everybody here.
Fantastic. Well, we are all looking forward to it, Jay. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Glad to be here.
You can find out more about Mission Trails Regional Park at www.mtrp.org, and you can get tickets for KNSJ's launch party at Mission Trails at www.knsj.org. And this concludes another edition of On the Road in East County.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso is on the air, people-powered radio. Please come to our official KNSJ launch party.
Saturday, August 3rd from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the beautiful Mission Trails Regional Park Visitor Center.
Come mix and mingle with our radio hosts and our celebrity guests in a spectacular natural setting. Enjoy live music, Native American flute players, delicious food and drinks, stargazing, museum tours, and a scavenger hunt. Golden Mike Awards presented to leaders and activists representing voices in our communities that are underrepresented.
RSVP and buy tickets at www.knsj.org.
This is Lynn Moneyfires bringing you the Tribal Beat, covering the news for and about our region's Native American communities. Today's guest on Tribal Beat is Richard Carrico. Richard is a longtime resident of San Diego, and he's lectured for the last 25 years at the Department of American Indian Studies at San Diego State. And he's an adjunct professor at City College, where he teaches anthropology. He has a master's in history and a bachelor's in history and anthropology. His primary research includes the Kumeyaay tribes of San Diego County and Baja, Mexico. He has served as Native American coordinator and principal investigator for survey and evaluation of more than 30,000 acres of Indian trust lands, as well as serving as project director for cultural resources of five Indian tribes. Along with writing more than 30 publications in professional journals, Richard is the author of numerous books, including Strangers in a Stolen Land, The Indians of San Diego County, From Prehistory to the New Deal, and he's currently working on a new book. Richard, I'm honored to have you join me today. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule.
Well, hello, Lynn. I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
I'd like to talk a bit about both your books, the new one as well as the most recent one, Strangers in a Stolen Land. Can you share a little bit about both books and your inspiration for writing them?
Sure. I wrote Strangers in a Stolen Land. It started actually back in the 1980s and into the 1990s because there was no one book that a student or a layperson, and I made it very much toward a layperson, could pick up and understand that Native American people had been here for 12,000 years at least, and that at one time there were 80 villages throughout San Diego County and 20,000 Native Americans living here, and then how all that changed when the Europeans came in, first the Spaniards, Mexicans, and later Americans. And I also wanted a book that had a more of an Indian voice in it. I've spent a lot of time interviewing elders and doing archaeology, and I wanted to combine that dirt side of it, that's from-the-ground archaeology, with the voice of some of the elders, Leroy Elliott and Jane Dumas, and some of those people here from the back country, frankly. So that was the impetus, and I had written several articles, and people would come to me and say, well, you've kind of teased us with a little candy here. We want the main course now. What's the rest of this? And so that's the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey used to say. And so the book goes from 12,000 years ago, which is the earliest dates we have for San Diego County approximately, up to 1938. And I intentionally stopped in 1938 after the New Deal and after the removal of the Capitan Grande Indians to Viejas and Barona, because that's my strength, that's my time period. And then after that, that's another book that might happen in the future.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
From your perspective, what changes have you seen in San Diego's tribal communities in the last 30 years?
I've seen enormous changes. When I used to lecture 30 years ago, if you were in my class 30 years ago, I would say that poverty on the average reservation in San Diego was 48 to 50% below the poverty line, that unemployment was 38 to 40%, that fetal alcohol syndrome was a major problem, and that women's groups and the Marine Corps and Salvation Army were taking turkeys and dinners up to the Indians on the reservations and that whole outreach program. And what's happened with gaming, because of gaming, but not entirely, but because of finances, because of money, is I've seen the tribes now pull themselves up. Most of them have done a very good job. They've had very good leaders like Anthony Pico and Danny Tucker and folks who are very strong, almost traditional leaders, and they've pulled themselves up. And while using the federal government based on some things we can talk about and the county, but basically on their own. And what I've seen is now they're revitalizing their languages. And so while the Kumeyaay language was taking a serious dip by 20 years ago and very few people were speaking it except for some elders, now it's being taught at Cuyamaca College. It's being taught at Verona.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. Stan Rodriguez and Raul Chrisman from Viejas have put together classes now. And you can actually take a class in Kumeyaay, and it goes on and on and on, beginning, middle, and advanced. I've seen the ability to bring people up from Pai Pai territory and Tipai territory in Baja California, native people, and they work with the tribes up here and talk about language and basket making and pottery. So it's truly been a revitalization, and watching that younger generation realize that what their grandmother told them was important, and knowing a Kumeyaay word for tree or for acorn mm-hmm. is part of your culture, because language is culture, and watching little six-year-old kids speak an entire sentence in Kumeyaay. That wouldn't have happened nearly as often 20, 30 years ago. And then just the sense of pride, of tribalness, of being a nation of people, not just a band of people.
As you just mentioned, and we had spoken about it earlier, you're passionate about the revitalization of the Kumeyaay language and culture. You've just mentioned a few things of how you see that's happening. What else? How else do you see that happening in the community?
I see it happening in most of the major reservations now have also formed a group called the Circle of Elders, or somehow to honor the mm-hmm. elder. Mm-hmm. And so they have lunches for them. They take them on field trips. And again, there's that whole reaching out to both sides, the very young and the very old, not one or the other. I see it in the youth are playing a role, because they're coming to a project I've been working on. They come to the elder and say, okay, you're being tape recorded and we're hearing you talk about place names, like Tecate is actually a Kumeyaay word.
Really?
Tijuana is an Indian word. It's not Spanish. Tijuana means swept clean from the beach, swept clean.
Oh.
Tecate means it's a knife, essentially. So you're telling granddad's recording this with you and you're hearing these, but what we want to see an internet. We want to see it on video. We want to see something alive, because they're a generation that wants movement. And frankly, like most younger children, having a shorter attention span.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm seeing that whole movement of the very young and the older people blending together to form something that in 5 or 6 years will be huge. There's fiestas now held about native foods, going back and using native foods. There's actually a couple cookbooks out.
Great.
One out of Heyday Press out of San Francisco or out of Berkeley, and there's recipes from San Diego County in there of using native products. Yeah.
That is awesome.
So again, it's in the kitchen, it's on the internet, it's back revitalization of language. There's a Kumeyaay mapping site that you can go to on the internet, and right now it just gives you the name of what does Powwai mean? It's not Powwai. Powwai. What does Powwai mean? Well, it means convergence, or a point where two things meet, and you click on it and you find that out. And what we're doing now is interviewing and recording elders saying these Kumeyaay words mm-hmm. so that when you click on Tecate or you click on Powwai, you'll hear a native speaker say it then, and then a picture will come up. It's out there. People think all this culture got completely lost, and unfortunately anthropologists kind of fed into that by saying 50 years ago, I'm interviewing the last of the. So anthropologists almost killed them off, in press at least. But meanwhile, the elders are sitting back there going, no, he wasn't the last one. And we just didn't tell you that story because we didn't want to share it with you. Because in the Spanish period, we would be killed.
That's very
telling
common
that story.
With a lot of tribes, actually.
It is.
Yeah.
So it went underground. So I almost see it like an underground river that's now coming back up, and there's springs all over the place, and they're bubbling out, and people are drinking from those springs, and they're getting knowledge. And so to me, as a historian and an anthropologist, it's been a phenomenal process watching that. But as a person versus the academic side, it's been even more phenomenal to go on a reservation and hear people talking Kumeyaay over lunch. That would not have happened much 30 years ago.
For you, that must be a rewarding experience, huh?
It is, and it just feeds into my passion, of course. It's like, and I'm so happy to have been a part of it, not to have been instrumental in any way, because I'm not, but to just have been a part of, like, a leaf floating along on this amazing river that's going great places. It's just so cool.
And building stronger.
Yep.
Finally, with all the work you've done in our native communities with regards to sacred sites, what's your personal opinion of the wind energy projects on the various reservations?
I put wind energy into all the categories of, let's say, a large casino, a wind energy project, fracking up in the northern tier, you know, whatever thing's going on is going to change the land. I always put it in the context of, first of all, I have to look at it from, is it serving the Native American community? So if it's on a reservation, I have to assume that the tribal council and maybe the general council voted on this.
Mm-hmm.
And so are they going to get economic revenue out of it? In some cases, are they going to get power that they wouldn't have had on the reservation before? Because there mm-hmm. are still some reservations mm-hmm. throughout the state that don't have electricity. And then you have to balance that off. That's the pragmatic side, is does it serve a practical purpose with is it actually endangering sacred sites? And then that's when it gets touchy, because they would have been required under federal law, all tribes are required on trust land to do environmental studies.
Right.
People think they don't have to do any environmental studies because it's exempt from the county. That's not true. Have to take it to the federal level. So assuming that they did their work and assuming that they hired good anthropologists and archaeologists, I would like to believe that those wind turbines did not get sighted on a known sacred site. Having said that, for many Kumeyaay, as many Native Americans throughout America, the land itself is sacred. The viewshed is sacred. And so if you drive past Campo today or La Posta, Manzanita area, and you see those giant turbines, and now they're building some south of the border as well, a lot of them, I've certainly talked to elders who have said, yes, they did not put them on top of a sacred site, but they've impacted the sacred landscape. That as a child growing up, I could walk out of my house and see the hills and think about my grandfather's stories. When I walk out now, I see wind turbines. I hear wind turbines. I see dead birds on the ground. And so for some people, it's the wrong thing to do. But I guess I always try to come back to Native Americans are no different at some level than any other human. There's always going to be a disparity of thought between the pragmatic side, the energy side. There's always going to be, should we build a shopping center near Gettysburg or not? Does that defame Gettysburg? Do we do wind turbines on Indian land? Do we put a road across the reservation? So at what point are you bringing the tribe along versus at what point are you hurting them for generations to come by an action you want to do now?
That's a common issue, the traditionals versus the progressives on all the reservations across the country. This is definitely a complicated issue in a lot of areas. As a matter of fact, I'd like to invite you to come back next week and speak more about maybe some political views, as far as you had mentioned something about, you know, how Reagan, how Bill Clinton, how Obama is affecting the tribes, even locally here. Would you be willing to join us again?
I'd be glad to do that, because that's a whole other issue, but it has roots that go back hundreds of years with the federal government. Absolutely. I'd be glad to, Lynn.
That's awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have for today. I want to thank my guest, Richard Carrico, for sharing his rich knowledge of the tribes here in San Diego. And I'd like to invite him back to maybe talk to us again next month if in his busy schedule. And I know he is busy. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in to the Tribal Beat. If you have a story you would like to hear more about or a person of interest in the community, please contact me at tribalbeat@eastcountymagazine.org. That's tribalbeat@eastcountymagazine.org.
Howdy! East County Magazine and KNSJ invite you to our Barbecue and Wild West Fest on Saturday, August 10th from 4 to 7 p.m. at the historic Descanso Town Hall in Descanso. Round up your friends and family for this fun-filled event. We'll have a Wild West show featuring the Hole-in-the-Wall Gang and the Gaskell Brothers reenacting scenes from our region's colorful Western past.
The Pine Creek Posse Band will provide live music, so grab your partner and bring your dancing shoes, or should we say cowboy boots. Plus, the Descanso Junction will be cooking up a tri-tip barbecue feast. We'll also have prizes and surprises at our Wild West Fest, which is all a benefit to support our wildfire reporting, alerts, and nonprofit community news. Yee-haw! Reservations are going fast, so save your spot now for our August 10th Wild West Fest. Call 619-698-7617 or email editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Today, you can also find more details at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
Welcome to Vines and Wines with your host, Greg Manis of the Manis Vineyards Estate.
Today we're going to introduce you to Terry and Michael, and they are the owners of the Ramona Ranch Winery. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Tell me a little bit about yourselves.
Well, Mike and I are both from a small town on the Oregon coast. Ramona appealed to us because of its rural nature, open spaces, and the opportunity to have horses and farm, all of which we're lucky to do.
Well, it's beautiful up here, I can tell you that much. How did you guys actually get started?
Well, we moved up to Ramona in 2004, and in 2005 we saw an invitation to attend a meeting of the Ramona Valley Vineyard Association. These meetings were held in people's homes, and we went, met a great group of people, and decided that it seemed like something we were interested in. We were invited to come and help out at harvest, and we were hooked.
Nice. And you started making your first wines that year? How did that work?
Well, we were paid for our labor, so to say, with 100 pounds of Syrah grapes. And we made our first batch of wine that year in 06. And then we installed our first vineyard later that year and have been just growing each year, getting a little more and more entrenched into the wine business.
Making more and more and more.
More and more. And Michael, you have your own vineyard installation business now. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. I started that recently, and I'm just trying to grow the region, the Ramona Valley area, and got a lot of people interested in planting grapes and just want to grow the region to make some great wine.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful growing environment up here. I understand that the Ramona Valley has its own AVA, which for our fans and listeners means American Viticulture Area. What's so special about Ramona?
Well, Ramona is unique, and I think when people drive up the hill to Ramona, they're surprised by the rocky outscapes. Mm-hmm. It almost looks like we're on another planet, and some people have told me it looks like the south of France. So it's ideal for growing grapes. Grapes were grown in San Diego County before Prohibition. It was a huge grape area. And grapes like the same things we do. They like hot days, cool evenings, a little breeze. So you add in Ramona's rocky soil, our south-facing slopes, and you have perfect growing conditions, which made us unique and recognized as an AVA.
I also understand that Ramona Ranch is also the co-owners of one of my favorite new little magazines, the Ramona Valley Wine Region magazine. When did this get launched?
That got launched like many great things, sitting around the table one Friday evening with a bunch of friends, drinking some good local wines, and we thought somebody needed to tell the story, so why not us as insiders and really starting out? We thought, well, let's do it. So we launched the magazine in 2011.
It's a good one too, folks.
Thanks. Our goal is to educate both the consumer and our growing trade. Mm-hmm. Ramona is a fairly new wine region. There's around 81 vineyards in Ramona right now.
Wow.
Like Mike said, more and more going in all the time. So we thought, well, there's a story here to tell. So we partnered with our friend Dave Billick, who has 30 years of publishing experience. And actually, the magazine was his idea. And we said, you know, you bring the publishing experience, we'll bring the vineyard and winery experience, and we're off and running. It's free online. It has the most up-to-date map of our region with 21 tasting rooms now up in and around Ramona.
What's the email address to that so people can check it out?
Yeah, it's free online. It's www.ramonavalleywineregion.com. And I encourage your listeners to check it out and let us know what they think.
With the new micro-vineyard boutique winery ordinance passing, what can your guests expect, you know, when they come out to see you guys?
They can expect to meet the winemakers, the owners, and the joke around here is that Napa spills more wine than Ramona makes in a year. So it's very small, intimate.
So we also make extremely limited quantities, so usually only one barrel of each varietal. So when it's gone, it's gone. For our listeners, that's 24 cases of wine, so very small production.
Very nice.
And I use the analogy that boutique or artisan wines are similar to artisan breads that you might pick up at the farmer's market. Every batch is completely different. It's unique. It's made by hand. It's not mass-produced. We don't use any machines in the making of our wines. So from the planting of the vines to the harvest and winemaking, we do everything by hand with extreme care to the quality. Great example is at our last harvest, we sorted 5,000 pounds of Sangiovese by hand, removing every shot berry or unripe berry, stems, leaves. We call it MOG, material other than grapes. You don't really want that in your wine at fermentation, and we're small enough to be able to sort through and pick every single one of those out.
Well, that's an awful lot of work for just two of you.
We round up all of our friends and we turned it into a party. So
absolutely.
Well, life's a party at the vineyard for sure. Well, one last question before we close here. Where can our listeners come to experience your wines?
We're open on Saturdays from noon to sunset, and details are available at the Ramona Valley Wine Region magazine or on our website, ramonaranch.net. We also are open on the occasional Sunday, although Mike and I still have full-time jobs during the week, so we try and take Sundays off, but we will open up on occasion or for private parties or by appointment. So I invite anyone who's interested in wine and the experience to take the time to come up to Ramona Valley. Again, there are currently 21 tasting rooms, and any one of us that you stop in can help you plan a special day in the country, and we're really just 35 minutes up the hill from San Diego.
It's beautiful up here. Come up and visit our good friends up in Ramona and come and visit the wine regions. Thanks so much for your time today. Hope everybody enjoyed meeting Michael and Terry.
Thanks, Greg, for coming up. We appreciate it.
You've been listening to Vines and Wines with Greg Maness, proprietor of the Maness Vineyards Estate. Visit the website at manisvineyards.com.
An Amera Media production.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's live radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.